Okay, welcome. If you're one of the, well, millions of people looking at today's housing market and thinking, how does anyone actually buy a home anymore? You are definitely not alone. Home ownership, it used to feel like the default setting, didn't it, for financial stability. But for so many today, especially younger folks juggling student debt, inflation, interest rates jumping all over, well, getting a mortgage feels less like a plan and more like, I don't know, hitting the jackpot. It's a real stressor, keeps people awake at night. So today, we're going to try and cut through some of that noise, the endless commentary, and dive right into some core strategic thinking on this.
Exactly. And we often look at these huge, sprawling reports, right? But today, we're doing something a bit sharper, more focused. We're treating a source's title not just as a label, but almost like a map, a diagnosis of the market, really. The source we're unpacking is this highly anticipated analysis, excerpts from Younger Buyers Affordable Homeownership Paths 2025. So yeah, not just news, but a kind of strategic roadmap for the immediate future.
Okay, let's unpack that then. Our mission here is to really dissect the core idea locked inside just that title. We're zoning in entirely on the meaning behind those key terms. The analysts picked younger buyers, affordable home ownership paths, and importantly, that specific date, 2025. Just by looking closely at the language, you know, we can get some immediate insight into the scale of the problem they see, and maybe the shape of the solutions this report is promising.
And I think this approach, focusing just on the title scope, is actually a huge shortcut for you, the listener. By getting a handle on the report's defined terms right away, we immediately grasp the pressure points everyone's talking about and the types of solutions, these paths that the market seems to think need adopting like right now. It helps move us past just saying, oh, there's a problem, and into understanding the framework being proposed to actually tackle it.
Okay, so let's jump into that first big term then. The audience they single out, younger buyers. The title leads with the demographic, not the economy, which, I mean, that immediately tells you where they think the main stress point is, right? When analysts lead with this group, what's the report basically signaling has gone wrong over the last, say, decade?
Well, what's really fascinating, I think, is the implied message that the old ways of moving up the housing ladder have just broken down for this specific group. You know, that traditional path graduate, get a decent job, save up for 5 years, buy a starter home. It's looking more like a sheer cliff face now for younger buyers. They're dealing with this kind of compounding pressure, median home prices that just exploded after 2020, and then this, well, unprecedented jump in interest rates that just slashed borrowing power.
Yeah, it's the double whammy, isn't it? It's not just that houses got expensive.
Exactly.
It's that the cost of borrowing that already expensive money went through the roof.
Precisely. I mean, if you look at the context going into 2025, the monthly payment on a typical home could easily be hundreds, maybe even over $1,000 more than just a few years back, and often without any real wage growth for younger professionals to offset that. So this inability for the next generation to start building equity, it points to a system that's kind of stalled out. The report focuses on them because they're the canary in the coal mine, basically. Their inability to buy signals bigger, longer-term problems for the whole market if we don't find solutions.
And the phrasing younger buyers seek, that emphasis implies the onus is on them to find a way through. Like they're being forced to innovate because the traditional system isn't keeping up. They're becoming the market's problem solvers almost by default.
That's a great point. It really does frame it that way. And it raises that question. Why not focus on, say, retirees downsizing or people moving up? It's because younger buyers are the engine for future market activity. They're also the group with the least financial cushion, often burdened by student loans. They just don't have the slack to absorb these huge cost increases. So their search for affordability is urgent, because if they fail, they risk becoming permanent renters, and that fundamentally changes the whole economic picture for the country down the line.
Okay, so that structural breakdown leads us right into the second and maybe the most critical phrase here. Affordable home ownership paths. This is where it gets really interesting for me. The source doesn't just promise vague solutions, it specifically talks about defined structured avenues, and crucially, it's plural paths. But hold on, isn't affordable home ownership paths maybe just, you know, fancy talk for smaller, cheaper houses? Like, do we really need a big report just to tell people to buy smaller?
Yeah, and that's a really important distinction to make. If the report was just saying, hey, maybe buy a condo instead of a detached house, the title would probably be something like Tips for Cheaper Housing, right? The use of paths, especially plural, strongly suggests systemic structural changes are needed. It's thinking beyond just shrinking your expectations or waiting for prices to drop. It implies that the traditional single path, know, the 30-year fixed mortgage on your own single-family home is basically blocked for a huge chunk of this demographic now.
Right. So if that main road is blocked, what kind of innovative, maybe non-traditional solutions are implied when analysts use a word like paths in a report looking ahead like this? What should you, the listener, sort of anticipate this report might actually dig into?
Well, the wording itself almost forces us to think about alternative models, both for ownership and financing. It recognizes affordability might need to be, well, manufactured somehow. So when we talk about new paths, we're likely thinking institutionally. For instance, the report is almost certainly going to explore things like shared equity models. That's where maybe a nonprofit or a government agency holds a stake in the home's equity, which brings down the upfront purchase price for the buyer.
Ah, okay. So that eases the pressure on the down payment and the loan amount right away.
Absolutely. And another path could be, say, co-buying arrangements. We're seeing more friends or multiple unmarried partners pooling their incomes and credit scores to qualify for loans they couldn't dream of getting alone. You know, before this crisis, these were kind of niche ideas. But a major report calling them paths sort of legitimizes them, brings them into the mainstream discussion. We're probably also talking about regulatory changes, maybe making it easier to build accessory dwelling units, ADUs, or granny flats. These change the physical nature of ownership, potentially providing rental income to help cover those massive mortgage payments.
So the report isn't just about the desire for a home. It's really focusing on the method of getting there affordably. It's like they're building new frameworks.
Yeah.
And if we connect that to the bigger picture, it sounds like the analysts are basically saying the market won't just fix itself enough for young buyers. So innovation isn't optional. It's mandatory.
It's fundamentally an acknowledgement of an economic reality, I think. You just can't wait for, say, a $600,000 house to magically become affordable for someone on a teacher's salary or a nurse's salary through market forces alone, not in this environment. So you have to structurally redefine how that $600,000 asset is acquired. Maybe it's $300,000 of private money boosted by some kind of innovative public or shared financing model. That's what affordable paths signals the deliberate creation of new ways in.
Okay, that sounds less like financial advice and more like blueprints for adapting the entire market.
Precisely. They have to be looking for solutions that are repeatable, scalable, structural. Things that don't just work for one lucky person in one city, but for, you know, large numbers of younger buyers across different regions. That need for scale is what turns these from just options into actual paths.
Which leads us neatly to that final key term, the specific timing. 2025. This isn't looking back. It's very much forward-looking, very timely for anyone listening right now who might be, say, saving for a down payment. Why does pinning it to that specific year matter so much? Why not just say the near future or something?
That specificity, 2025, it gives the whole thing immediate and, frankly, urgent relevance. It means the analysis, the findings, these promised paths, they're all meant to be grounded in the economic realities we're seeing now and expecting very soon. They're anticipating the dynamics already unfolding. We know things like Fed moves, inventory levels, demographic trends can change, but nailing it to 2025 gives the report a kind of predictive edge.
Right. It sets the time frame for the listener's own decision making. If I'm thinking about buying in the next, 18 months or so, this report and these paths are supposedly designed for my immediate reality.
That's exactly. By focusing on 2025, the report implicitly suggests that the window for relying solely on traditional solutions has effectively closed now. The situation demands immediate, actionable strategies, strategies that need to be understood and potentially implemented this year if they're going to make a difference in your financial planning for next year. It's basically saying this isn't just a temporary blip. These challenges are the new baseline, at least for the coming year. This is a playbook for the next cycle of mortgage applications.
And it also implies that these strategies, these paths, need to be robust enough to handle whatever 2025 actually throws at us, whether that's, you know, interest rates staying high or inventory staying tight. They need to be practical under these tougher conditions.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The time frame works like a commitment. The analysts are essentially saying, look, these are the solutions we believe can actually work under the economic pressures we foresee in the year ahead. It confirms that the strategy of just waiting it out might be over. If younger buyers are going to get into the market soon, it likely has to be through one of these newer, more structurally sound paths, starting pretty much now.
Okay, so let's recap our deep dive into just the title then.
Yeah.
Younger Buyers Affordable Homeownership Paths 2025. We've seen how the source clearly flags a crisis centered on younger people, driven by these crushing cost burdens. It defines the necessary response as shifting away from that single, maybe broken traditional route towards multiple structurally different paths. and it pins it to a specific timeline, 2025, stressing the urgency and relevance for planning right now. We've kind of moved beyond just hoping things get better, haven't we? Towards needing concrete, systematic ways in.
It really does set that proactive tone. But maybe let's end with a slightly provocative thought for you, the listener, to chew on. If the classic single-family home purchase isn't the guaranteed path to building wealth for this generation anymore, what does homeownership itself even start to mean? Especially when the asset might be shared or fractionalized or structurally tied to an income unit like an ADU, are we kind of witnessing the evolution, maybe even the end, of that traditional American dream of the white picket fence and seeing the birth of something new, something potentially more collaborative but definitely more complex in the housing world? That, I think, might be the real revolution hiding inside that simple word, paths.